You're listening to The Morning Drip, South Georgia's number one morning show. For independent voices and liberated perspectives, got a question or comment, you can text the show at 229-234-1307. 229-234-1307.
Hey, and good morning. Welcome to Tuesday edition of The Morning Drip. I'm Donovan. It is Tuesday, October the 7th. It's still Spooktober. Hey, good morning to everybody out there. I'm glad you could join me this morning on this fine Tuesday. Like I said, it's October the 7th, 2025. It is currently 68 degrees. According to the weather app, it's clear skies right now. But this week, we're basically going to have rain and possible T-storms almost every day through the rest of the week. So what's been going on, everybody, over the weekend? Did you have a good weekend? I hope you did. My weekends have gotten to where they're somewhat busy. either I'm doing stuff around the house, like the yards, which fortunately for like the last month, I haven't really had to do anything because lack of rain means lack of growth. And then, of course, we've got leaves and pine straw all over the place. And that's something actually that my wife really likes. She likes the leaves. It gives her a true sense of fall. And so she likes that. Me, you know, I'm the kind of guy that I want straight lines where there needs to be straight lines. I want curved lines where there needs to be curved lines. And I like to have a nice coiffed lawn. But, you know, we don't always get what we want, right? You know, speaking of not getting what we want, I come across this article talking about how Georgia ranks among top 10 most expensive state to own a car. This is according to Consumer Affairs. So their survey, their study, whatever they did, yeah, it was a study by the Consumer Affairs. They looked at the three main expenses drivers face: insurance, repairs, and fuel. And what they discovered was that drivers in this great state of Georgia pay 13% more than the national average. Georgia drivers pay about $3,400 per year to own and operate a vehicle. Insurance runs around $1,510 a year. Ooh, $1,510 a year, making it number six for the most expensive state for coverage. Repair costs average about $400, a little over $400 annually, ranking number four for the highest nationwide. And gas totals about almost $1,500 per year, placing Georgia at the number 12 spot for fuel cost. I need to go back up to this insurance. Now, I guess it has to do with the fact that none of my vehicles are new. We have a 2003 Ford Explorer, and we have a 2013 Ford Focus. And then my son, who lives and works in Seattle, but bought a 2003 Ford Ranger a couple of years before he moved and basically was like, I don't need to take the vehicle with me. It's here. So basically every vehicle we have is easily over 10 years old. Two of them are over 20 years old. So, and of course I don't cover his insurance. He pays his insurance, which is ironically very, very high. I mean, we pay insurance for two vehicles and homeowners with Farm Bureau. So it all, you know, I guess we get a little bit of a discount because we bundle all that stuff together. So $1,510 a year. I don't know. I've got to go back and look. I actually got my insurance bill yesterday, but I put it on auto pay. So I just make sure it gets paid and it is what it is. I think it's costing about $133 a month. So, and of course you pay every 6 months or you can pay monthly, but it's for 6 months. So yeah. That tracks. That's about, yeah, I thought that was high, but nope. It is not high. So when compared to the state's median household income, these car costs account for about 4.5%, ranking Georgia number 10 in terms of cost relative to income. And then there's a breakdown. Most expensive states for car ownership. Number one is Delaware at $4,300. Number two is New York at $3,600. Number three is Florida at $3,400, almost $3,500. Mississippi, New Jersey, California, they're in the $3,400 range. And then Georgia is number seven. New Mexico rounds out the top 10 at $3,200. And I can tell you, personal experience here, there's always this mindset about the continuing cost of older vehicles versus buying a new vehicle, even if you've got to have that payment. And so it's very, very difficult to get anything brand new today under $30,000. Vehicles that, when we bought the 2003 Ford Explorer, and granted, this was 2003, we bought it that year, it was $35,000 or $36,000, and that was a lot in 03. But I was able to finance it for 5 years, zero interest. So that was good. Now, last time I looked at prices, and I could be slightly off on this, so, you know, don't hold my feet to the fire and say, well, this is not accurate. I think a Ford Explorer along the lines of what we have today is going to start out at like $55,000 or $60,000. It's ridiculous. On the flip side of that, over the last 2 years, I have easily spent between $5,000 and $6,000. Probably more than that now. Over the last 3 years, I've spent somewhere between $6,000 and $7,000 on repairs on that 03 Explorer. I've had to have the air conditioner fixed. I've had to have the brakes and rotors repaired or replaced and all of that. And I've had to have the transmission worked on. So those are three things right there. And each one of them was anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 a clip over the last 3 years. So yeah, $6,000-$7,000 that I've spent on repairs on that vehicle. All right, so let's just say it's $7,000, and we're going to divide it by 36. So in a way, that's about $194-$195 a month if it were equated to a monthly payment over 3 years. Now, granted, as we continue to own the vehicle, you can amortize that out, but it really does come down to, at what point are you better off either, I don't know, selling the vehicle to somebody that's I guess, handsy when it comes to working on vehicles and they want to do it themselves, or maybe trading it in for $1,000. I mean, that's literally how I got my, in 1995 or 96, that's how I got my Ford Ranger. It was one of those things down in, I think it was Cook County Ford, where they were doing the $1,000 junker thing. If you could drive it or drag it, they'd give you $1,000. And so I took my wife's 85 or 86 Type 10 Cavalier, which the sunroof was leaking. So if it rained, you were going to get your butt wet when you got in it. And I drove it down there and traded it in and was able to get a 4-cylinder manual transmission, 5 in the floor. No frills, really. Had air conditioning, no cruise control. The windows were manual. The door locks were manual for about $11,000. This was 1996, I think. So that's the thing. At what point are you realistically continuing to spend money on repairs? And then you look at that as a monthly payment versus buying something new and then hopefully being able to pay it off in 5 years. I'll leave you with this before we go to break. I have seen it several times, and I think this is pretty good advice, that as you age, when you get around about the age of 60, and hopefully you can afford to do this, if you can do it with cash, that's great, but that's actually the better way of doing it. But when you get to around 60, buy your very last vehicle, buy a brand new one, because that is probably going to be the last vehicle that you ever own. Even if you keep that 20 years, that puts you at 80 and your vehicle's at 20 years old. And hopefully if you keep it well maintained, you know, take it in on for routine maintenance, oil change, tire rotation, replacing the tires whenever they get to a worn state, usually around 60 to 80,000 miles, depending. And the older you get, there's a very good chance you're not going to be driving that much anyway. I mean, that's like right now, I put less than, God, I probably put less than 3 or 4,000 miles per year on my car because the type of business that I run, I can do easily 80%, 85% remotely once everything is set up. It's very rare that I have to go out and be on site to do things. So it's something to think of. If you're approaching that and you're like, yeah, that makes sense. If I can do it, that's definitely what we're going to do. And we're going to do one singular vehicle. You know, at 60, there's really no need to have two vehicles with two people, especially when one of them's definitely not working and the other one might still be working part-time. I don't know. Let me know your thoughts. Shoot me a text. That text number is 229-234-1307. Again, that's 229-234-1307. Or you can email morningdrip@radiotiff.com. We'll be back.
You survived the commercials. Congratulations. You're still tuned to The Morning Drip. Independent voices, liberated perspectives, and the occasional caffeine-fueled rant. Ring us up at 912-491-DRIP or text 229-234-1307. Operators are standing. Okay, it's just me, but still.
Hey, and welcome back, everybody, to The Morning Drip. I am Donovan. It is currently 7:27 a.m. on this wonderful Tuesday, October the 7th. It is Spooktober. So, you know, we can't go a show without talking about the big elephant in the room, and that is the government shutdown. And honestly, all of the misinformation that is circulating around that. But first off, let's talk about something I guess you would look at as more of a positive thing. Looks like the Georgia TSA workers are going to receive a relief package during the government shutdown. Georgia Congresswoman Nakima, and my apologies if I have screwed that up, Williams, and City of Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens, is it Andre? I guess so, have secured a relief package of TSA workers at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta National Airport. So according to the Congresswoman's office, new relief measures have been approved to support TSA workers at the airport during the government shutdown. Think about it. If I'm not badly mistaken, the Atlanta airport is the busiest international airport in the world, definitely in the United States. Since the shutdown that began Wednesday, October 1st, has left thousands of federal workers, including TSA workers, without pay, even while they continue to work, this is kind of a good thing. So starting on October the 11th, keep in mind today's the 7th, so this doesn't start until the 11th, the following relief measures will begin to roll out to help TSA workers be able to continue their security duties. They're going to get free parking. TSA employees will have access to complimentary parking during their shifts. Okay, I guess they had to pay? Huh. That's not surprising. Meal vouchers. Full-time TSA employees will get two meal vouchers. I can't say vouchers today. Per shift, part-time employees will get one. And concessionaire support. Airport concessionaires may offer discounts or special meals to TSA staff in recognition of their service during the shutdown. I think this is great. I think this is a good thing. And of course, once the shutdown is over, they'll get back pay. Because I very seriously doubt that they're in that group of people that Trump is hell-bent on trying to use this as an excuse to fire people. But going along with that, and again, I think that's a positive thing, and hopefully this government shutdown won't last much longer. Down here in South Central Georgia, in Tifton, we are in Georgia's 8th Congressional District of the United States House of Representatives, includes Tiff County, Benio County, Irwin, and a lot of other counties. And our representative is Austin Scott. Now, I've never met Austin Scott. I have a friend slash client who is friends with Austin Scott. And he has told me in the past that Austin Scott is a good guy. Now, I suppose everybody considers their friend a good guy. And being a, quote, good guy is relative. As far as his representation for this district, granted, he's a Republican. I'm not. But there have been Republicans in the past that I've supported. Like I've said before, up until the second Bush W, George W. Bush run, I always voted Republican. During his second run for office, which he won, I voted against him. And I have never voted for a Republican since then, whether it's been for state elections or federal elections. Quite honestly, even if it was local elections, which I don't vote in, I wouldn't vote Republican. They'd have to do something to really, really, really sway me to their side. And number one would be, you're not a MAGA cultist, okay? You can see and call out the bullshit for what it is. If you can do that and still say that you're a Republican, then we can have a conversation. Anyway, I'm getting off topic here. So as he normally does, Austin Scott's office will send out a weekly newsletter giving you updates on things that he's done for the community or his take on things that are going on in government and what have you. And he's a big advocate for the military, especially for the bases that we have here that are in his district. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we have a representative government. We call it a democracy. It's actually a republic, but we have a representative democracy. So as you know, if you know anything about the way the government works and has taken social studies and civics and any of that in school, which I'm not sure they teach that anymore, then you'll understand that we elect people to represent us because it's just untenable for 330 million people to cast their vote every time some new legislation comes up and goes through Congress. It just doesn't work. So in his capacity as representing us, military bases. So in this, the reason why I'm talking about this, and again, this ties into the government shutdown because this continues to perpetuate the lie that the right keeps pushing. So his newsletter, it argues that the ongoing federal government shutdown is the fault of Senate Democrats led by Chuck Schumer for refusing to pass a continuing resolution, also known as a CR, that the House of Representatives approved over 2 weeks ago. It claims that the House's bill was bipartisan and would have kept the government open without new spending. He goes on to blame Senate Democrats, including Georgia senators, our two senators, Ossoff and Warnock, for the shutdown, which he says has forced 2 million service members and 400,000 Defense Department civilians to work without pay, while 330,000 others are furloughed. All right, see, he focused on the military. Again, all right, he goes on to accuse Democrats of holding up funding to demand $1.5 trillion in additional deficit spending and to direct money toward liberal priorities, such as, wait for it, free health care for undocumented immigrants and extending COVID-era subsidies. One of those two things is a lie. The portion of this letter that contains a misleading or false claim is that last statement. He accuses Democrats of holding up funding to demand $1.5 trillion in additional deficit spending and to direct money toward liberal priorities such as free health care for undocumented immigrants and extended COVID-era subsidies. All right, truth. Yes, the Democrats do want the COVID-era subsidies for the ACA to be extended permanently. What the Democrats do not want is to provide free health care to undocumented immigrants. Every single time a Republican says that in a blog, on a news show, whether it's Mike Johnson, anybody on the right that makes that accusation, they're 100% lying. 100% lying, because that is not what the Democrats are after. And something that they keep trying to bring in to muddy the water, and I've seen this, I think Caroline Leavitt has said it, bless her pea picking heart, and they love to point to the fact that if you're an undocumented slash the way they want to call you, illegal immigrant, and you have to go to the hospital, you go to the emergency room because you need medical treatment, that's one of the things that they keep trying to bring up as an example that the Democrats want to provide free health care to undocumented immigrants. I hate to burst your bubble, and I cannot remember the acronym, and I think it was around 85 or 86, but a Republican president, Ronald Reagan, ever heard of him? He signed into law a bill that had bipartisan support in the House and the Senate that required hospitals to care for people that can't pay. That extends to undocumented slash illegal immigrants. That has nothing to do with this. Smoke and mirrors, people. Smoke and mirrors. They love to bring out these little morsels to muddy the water. It's like, oh, well, see, they want free health care. You can't get free health care, but they want illegals to have free health care. They can go to the hospital if they've been injured. They don't have to pay. The federal government pays. The taxpayers pay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know what? As a citizen yourself, and if you're in the poverty or below poverty and you go to the hospital because you need medical care, you know what you don't have to do? You don't have to pay. It's called indigent care. So that's a red herring. That has nothing to do with this. What the Democrats want to do is to roll back some of the gutting that the BBB, the big bastard of a bill, did to Medicare and Medicaid. I've talked about this before. But it has nothing to do with providing free health care to immigrants or illegal immigrants. If you are a legal resident but not a citizen, then you do qualify for the same perks as citizens do. But that's because you've gone through the proper channels and become a legal resident. The other thing, as we've discussed ad nauseum, is the fact that the ACA subsidies, these are the enhanced subsidies that they're talking about. The enhanced subsidies were temporarily expanded during the COVID-19 pandemic, which allowed more people to qualify for assistance. Originally, subsidies were available to those earning up to 400% of the federal poverty level. The enhancements allowed higher income individuals to receive help. It had premium caps. The enhanced subsidies capped premium cost at 8.5% of an individual's income, making coverage more affordable. What the Democrats are trying to do is stop these subsidies from expiring at the end of this year. They expire at the end of 2025 unless Congress acts to extend them. And of course, once you give something to somebody, it's very difficult to take it back. So if these subsidies are not extended, the average premiums for the ACA marketplace plans could increase by 114%, significantly affecting affordability for somewhere around about 22 million enrollees. That's the reason why the Democrats are holding out and not going with what the Republicans call a clear, no entanglements or anything like that, CR, saying that, okay, Dems, if you'll go ahead and let us get the government open back up, then we promise, we pinky promise that we'll have discussions about extending the ACA. And here's the kicker. Polls show that the majority of Republicans, their own party members, people that vote for them, also want the ACA subsidies extended permanently. So in essence, the fight over the extension of the ACA subsidies is literally a bipartisan issue. It's just not seen that way on the right because, I don't know, maybe they get butt hurt or something. They won't even come to the table to negotiate at all. And you can't trust the Republicans. But by the same token, if the situation were reversed and it was the Republicans holding up a CR because they wanted the Democrats to come to the table and do something, and the Democrats said, open the government back up and we'll have a discussion, I wouldn't trust them either. Whichever side has the power has no incentive to compromise. None. And it's unfortunate, but I think that's where we are. That's where we are right now. So my point is the fact that even right here in our own backyard, those that were elected to represent us, and no, I never voted for Austin Scott, will not vote for Austin Scott, but those that were elected to represent us are still lying right along with the rest of the party. Trump comes out and says it every chance he gets. Leadership in the House comes out and says it every chance they get. I mean, Mike Johnson has said multiple times on news outlets, the Democrats just want to inflate the deficit, $1.5 trillion. They want to provide free health care to illegal immigrants and blah, 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 blah. Wrong. 100% wrong. But I guess the old adage still holds true. How do you know when a politician is lying? When they open their mouth. All right, we'll be back in a bit.
Tuned in to WRTO, Radio Tift Online, broadcasting loud and proud from Tifton, Georgia, and powered by Tifton Media Works, LLC. Got questions, comments, or want to get your business on the air? Call us now at 229-261-9399 or drop us a line at station@radiotift.com. You'll also find our advertising rate card anytime at radiotift.com. Stick around. The music you love is just getting started.
Back to the Morning Drip, because shouting at the TV just isn't interactive enough.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Drip. I am Donovan. It's currently 7:53 a.m. on this wonderful, okay, so maybe not so clear. Looks like it's overcast, if I can speak today. Tuesday, October 7th, 2025. Again, it is October. All right. In our last segment, I want to hit a couple of things, you know, some more interesting, some fun stories, if you will. So in East Petersburg, Pennsylvania, neighbors spent a month trying to befriend and safely capture a mysterious pig who kept wandering through their yards. They later named the very friendly pig Petey. He'd been roaming from county to county, occasionally stopping to play with the local cats and the dogs. And after weeks of patient effort, residents finally managed to secure Petey in a pen and call Lancaster Farm Sanctuary, LFS, for help. The rescuers picked him up, brought him to the sanctuary where he could finally rest after his stressful time on the run. LFS said Petey was exhausted, but he was safe, recovering both physically and emotionally with the help of caregivers and locals who had grown fond of the pig, expressed relief and affection, happy to know that he is now in a place where he will be loved, his forever home. Okay, I know some people have pigs as pets, and that's fine. I don't understand it because I'm a carnivore, and when I see a pig, I see bacon, I see ham. You can call me cruel if you want, and I don't care how many times you try to wash a piglet, and as they grow and you keep them in the house, that's the thing that bothers me, is the people that keep pigs in the house. That is just, pig pens are filthy for a reason, because pigs are filthy. So to keep one in your house, just blows my mind. But, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that's going to look at somebody's pet and go, bacon. Even though, to me, that's pretty damn funny. I don't know. What do you think? You think pigs make good pets? Or when you see them, do you see bacon, ham, pulled pork? Oh, breaking somebody's brains this morning. Trunk or treat. I had forgotten about this, actually. It's a modern twist on the Halloween tradition. It's also become a suburban favorite. It has somewhat replaced the door-to-door candy hunt with festive gatherings in parking lots. So families decorate their car trunks, the kids dress in costumes, and everyone collects candy in a safe, controlled environment. You know, basically, it turns Halloween into a kid-friendly tailgating party. This concept has been around for a few decades now. It began in the early 90s. It largely promoted by churches as a wholesome, safer alternative to traditional trick-or-treating. Probably also gave them the added benefit of trying to steer children away from the evils of Halloween. I don't know. That's just my own bias. But yeah, I could see it. It's a safer alternative to traditional trick-or-treating, spread through the South, and by the 2000s, it became a national phenomenon. So once again, us Southerners taking the lead. The appeal grew to concerns over traffic safety, stranger danger fears, of course, and lack of walkable neighborhoods. That's true. That is very true. Until we moved to where we are in 2006, I grew up out in the country, out in the boonies. So nobody came trick-or-treating out there. But then when I moved into a suburban neighborhood, the first few years we were here, we actually did have kids come around. And what got me at that point was the fact they would literally come out here in minivans, slide the doors open, and be like little ants just pouring out of the minivan, making their way around the neighborhood. That, I haven't seen anything like that in almost a decade. I don't think anybody comes out here to trick-or-treat now. And of course, to me, this makes the most sense right here. You know, the traffic safety issues, the stranger danger fears, and the lack of walkable neighborhoods. All right? So today, trunk-or-treats are hosted by churches, they're hosted by schools and malls across America, and social media, of course, as social media does, has amplified their popularity. So it's turned car decorating into a fun competition. Of course, you're going to have your purists. They lament the decline of door-to-door trick-or-treating. But a lot of families, most families, see trunk-or-treat as a practical, community-centered celebration. Because at the end of the day, or end of the night, Halloween, candy is candy, you know? So I think it's kind of a cool idea. And again, Southern states representing. We started that phenomenon. Last thing we're going to talk about today, this is more of a celebrity type thing, and then I'll let you go because it's time to get this day started. Have you ever heard of Tom Cruise and every Christmas, it became widely known that he would give these cakes out to his friends? You know, it was almost like a badge of honor. If you wound up getting a cake from Tom Cruise for Christmas, you had made the list, right? Because he would send these cakes out to friends like, you know, Jimmy Fallon, Rosie O'Donnell, Kristen Dunst, Henry Cavill, Angela Bassett during the holidays. Well, these cakes came from a bakery in L.A. called Dawn's Bakery, D-O-A-N, apostrophe S, Dawn's Bakery. Well, they've recalled two cakes. They've recalled the white chocolate coconut cake, which was the one that was made famous by Tom Cruise and his annual holiday gifting, and it's Carol Bundt cake due to undeclared wheat and milk on the labels, and this is according to the FDA. So there's nothing wrong with the cakes per se. It's just the fact that they don't indicate on the label that there's wheat and milk in the cake. Okay, common sense would say there's wheat and milk in the cake. But I get it. There's a lot of people that have allergies, allergic to gluten and wheat and all of that. And I understand that. So I'm not downing that. But the recall affects cakes sold nationwide via goldbelly.com between June 1st and September 24th, 2025. The undeclared allergens could cause, of course, serious or life-threatening reactions for people allergic to wheat or milk, but no illnesses or allergic reactions have been reported. So basically, this is just a CYA measure. This is a family-owned bakery. It ships cakes at retail for over $100. And of course, count numerous Hollywood celebrities among the recipients. So they discovered the issue during a routine inspection. They have since corrected the labeling. So Jimmy, Rosie, Kirsten, Henry, and Angela, you're probably still going to get your cakes from Tom this holiday season. So I wouldn't worry about it. All right, everybody. That's it for this Tuesday morning, October the 7th edition of The Morning Drip. I hope you were able to join us live. As it stands right now, the plan is to do this show on Tuesday and Thursday mornings. And if we find the need, then we'll add an additional day. But right now, it's Tuesday and Thursday, unless something changes. Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember the text line. If you can send a text anytime. 229-234-1307. Our call-in number during the show is 912-491-DRIP. That is 912-491-3747. But it's only active during the show. Otherwise, you're just going to get a busy signal. And you can email morningdrip@radiotift.com or morningdrip@wrto.fm. WRTO.fm goes to radiotift.com. I just felt like I needed to get that domain. It's expensive. .fms are expensive. And no, they don't stand for frequency modulation or FM radio. It's actually a thing you need to know about TLDs, especially anything that's beyond like the standard .net, .com, .org and all of that. But your .ccs, your .cos and all, basically they are owned by countries. And so when you buy a domain that has what we call the TLD, the dot whatever, that's not a .com, .net, .org, but it's like, you know, .co, .fm, there's hundreds of them out there, if not more. You know, the owner of that TLD, which is usually a country, gets a little cut of that. So anyway, I'll stop rambling. I'll let you get out of here. I appreciate your time. Remember, Tuesday and Thursday mornings around 7 a.m., we'll get the show started. Apparently, I haven't had enough caffeine this morning. And we'll go until we have nothing else to talk about. So, everybody have a wonderful day. We'll see you back here on Thursday.